Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life. Once upon a time, there was a podcast that took a week off. After years of weekly podcasts, they took a week off because they just needed some time. Themselves.
Some alone time.
Mm-hmm.
You may have not, listener, you may have not even noticed. I don't know how many of our listeners track, you know, when we're releasing episodes, but maybe you did notice. And if you did, I am heartened by this news.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for noticing.
Ben and I were vacationing on holiday, as they say, and there's an accumulation of just things going on, Ben.
There are things going on
that squeeze time and commitments. And anyway, but we're back here in front of the microphones, looking at each other on the computer as we're wont to do. And we're doing a little introduction to this podcast.
Yes, an introduction to today's episode is what we're doing. Before we get into it, though, Matt, I don't know if we talked about this on the last podcast. I mean, we talked a little bit about establishing a rule of life. Which is kind of a New Year's resolution, that kind of thing that people think about when the calendar year turns over. And I wondered if you are doing anything. Do you have any resolutions? Do you have a word for the year? Anything? Do you have a new rule of life? What are you doing in 2025 that's different than 2024, Matt? Anything?
Well, thanks for asking, Ben. Mm-hmm. I'm not really great at resolutions. I feel like there's I have great expectations for them, and then I'm unable to kind of follow through with them, in ways that I want.
Right.
But I have gotten away from reading fiction, and I am committed to reading more good fiction this year. So that's one thing that I'm doing this year. Another thing that I'm doing this year is finding a therapist. our insurance just changed, you and I. We got on our insurance through our denomination, and I've been sort of waiting to get into that insurance before I started another counseling relationship. And so I need to find a therapist. I haven't had one for several months. And then there was one other thing. Oh, yeah, I feel like this is the year of me tuning into my body. So I've started to do some breathing work. I've started to do some specific stretching exercises. I've started to try to be more present to my body, because I feel like when you get to be my age, Ben, you can't ignore your body. Let me just take my word for it. You can't ignore your body anymore, right? You can't try to live separate from or in spite of.
Or use it as a, just assume it's a tool for your mind to do whatever it wants.
Or, just ignore it, and I feel like I have been able to, get away with that for most of my life. And it's not caught, I wouldn't say it's caught up to me, but I would say I'm convicted of it and I don't want it to catch up to me. So, taking better care of my body, taking dominion of my body in a way that is commiserate with its dignity. So those are a smattering of things that don't require, getting up a strict 4 a.m. every day and memorizing the book of Ecclesiastes.
that was last year's resolution for you?
I did it in January. Done. No. Something much more, rigorous.
Yeah. That makes sense. That's cool.
Yeah, how about you?
I haven't, I feel like I'm behind, as far as the calendar year turns over. I felt a little anxiety about am I going to have time to think about my life, you know, review. Mm-hmm. It's like I found it's a good time for me to just review, you know, take some time, use some sort of tool to just say like, how was last year for me? And try to be just a bit more intentional about what I'm investing my time in instead of, I think for me as a, like, if you guys know the Enneagram, the Enneagram gut types, which I'm one, I'm the Enneagram one, which is a gut type. One of our tendencies is that we can just get into the regular rhythms and routines of life and sort of turn our brains off because we're good at like just doing things, like getting things done. So the regular stuff of life is, it comes easy to me. Hmm. And yeah, I guess I'm just convinced I need to continue to, I need to do some kind of exercise. I think to think about this. So I think when I realized that the turn of the calendar year is an arbitrary deadline for that, I was like, oh, okay. I can put this off for a little bit. That's okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm looking forward to doing that because I do think one of my convictions is that, that I think there is a tendency for me to, I just do the things that I know need to be done. But that can actually prevent me from really engaging my mind and doing the right thing and saying, well, what do I actually need to be doing instead of this needs to be done. I can just do it. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna stop unconsciously doing things and start engaging and saying, you know what? What do I need to be doing? You know?
Yeah.
I'm turning 50 this year. Yeah. What you can say?
Really?
Yeah.
Do you need me to speak up?
I've needed you to speak up for several. Actually, you, Matt, I have never needed you to speak up. There are times when I'm like, man, that dude is talking loud.
Could you lower your voice, reason. Please? Yeah. Could you just stop speaking, please? Yeah, man. I think what I see, there's some connections there about being more present.
Yeah.
More fully available and open to the present.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, the present moment. But then also, yeah, I was just reflecting too, this is Enneagram, more nerdery on the Enneagram. But I think your type, Matt, as a four, you are the repressed part. So, you know, the Enneagram is like the heart center, mm-hmm. the body center, or the gut center, mm-hmm. and then the mind center, the thinking center. And every Enneagram type has one of those three areas that they're suppressed in. That they tend to ignore, that they tend not to, they get into a loop between the other two. Mm. And your type is a think-feel loop. So think-feel, and you mm-hmm. ignore your body. So I find it interesting that you're like, I need to pay attention to my body. My loop, my suppressed center is the thinking center. And so my loop is feel-do. And I find it interesting as I'm reflecting on what we both just said, that we're both engaging the center that is suppressed for us according to our Enneagram type. I need to engage my mind and do the right thing instead of just do in response to my feelings and then feel in response to my doings. And you are, you know, wanting to get out of this think feel loop and wanting to engage your body.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. Well, it's good. I mean, if we need to spur on each other to good works, then perhaps. Yeah. Listener, I don't know if you engage in feelings, listener.
I was trying to do a segue into our episode.
Okay. All right. Well, Ben, why don't you take two? Ready, go.
Speaking of feelings, we're talking with none other than Christy Penley today.
Yeah.
Listeners, you may know Christy Penley from all the times that she's on this podcast as one of our co-hosts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we've never had her on as a guest. She's talking a bit about the work that she did for her demon. And you maybe don't know that much about Christy.
Well, should I give you some info?
Matt, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about Christy.
Yeah. Christy Penley is married to Paul and she has six kids and they live in Colorado Springs. And she is one of the pastors on the teaching team at Pulpit Rock Church. She's an avid outdoors woman, and she loves college football, as you probably have picked up listening to us chat.
She loves every team equally.
No, that's not true. She loves Michigan football, just absolutely loves them. Mm-hmm. And she has spent decades teaching. She's taught Bible to kids and youth and adults in school and church settings. She has a master's in education with an emphasis in Bible teaching from Columbia International University in South Carolina. And she's just finished up, which you referenced earlier, her doctorate of ministry from Denver Seminary. And she's sharing with us today the contents of her dissertation on emotions and the kingdom of God. So let's let her talk. Christy Penley, welcome to the Gravity Commons podcast.
Thank you for having me.
First time, first timer,
first time guest.
It's funny to be on this side of things, friends.
Long time host. Yeah, you know. Christy, we're talking about kingdom emotions today, and this was the culmination of several year journey for you getting your doctorate. Maybe tell us how this topic for your thesis came to be and why it grabbed your attention.
Yeah, well, you know, with Gravity, we talk a lot about these moments where God's breaking in and our eyes are open to what God wants to teach us, what he's inviting us into. And I think emotions are a part of that, that when we have these emotional reactions, when we see our emotions, it's like a little flag and we can pay attention to that and notice it and say, hey, God, what are you inviting me into as a way of growing in greater intimacy with God?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is maybe, I'm just reflecting personally, that's different than the messages I got about emotions. As a kid, I was one of those kids that felt everything like turned up all the way to 11. And so I grew up with a complicated / I was almost embarrassed of my emotions, that my emotions were too much and they would get me in trouble and I couldn't really control them. And then when I became a Christian, emotions went from like something I was embarrassed of to something that just weren't important.
Yeah.
They were, you know,
can't rely on them. They're
untrustworthy. Fickle. They lie to you, right?
Yeah. Or even seen as immature. Thinking is more mature than feeling is at least what I've heard, even from the pulpit.
For sure.
And so, yeah, I think different people respond differently to emotions. You know, they can kind of power through emotions. They can avoid emotions and be like, I don't want to feel that. I want to pretend like that's there. Or they can kind of glide through life and be apathetic towards emotions and just kind of go throughout and just ignore them. But I think in my study, I wanted to attend to my emotions, to look at them and to see what can I learn? What am I, you know, being invited into?
Yeah. Well, you say in this study that emotions, like I just described I gave a very brief flyover of many decades of my life. But one of the ways to describe that is like I had different relationships to my emotions at different times in my life. But in all those times, my emotions were a hindrance, an obstacle, a nuisance. They were kind of inconvenient to me. And so they were maybe pathologized as bad, right? If I could just get my emotions under control, or if I could just feel things less, or if I could just stop letting them run my life, then I could be happy. But you talk about that emotions aren't good or bad. What's another way to think about them that lets us reclaim emotion as, you know, a vital, important part of our formation?
Yeah, I do say emotions aren't good and bad. And when people hear that, they're like, Christy, like I just, you know, lost my grandma and the emotion that I'm having about that feels bad. Or I'm really angry about the guy who just cut me off in driving and that feels bad. And yeah, I argue that I think that emotions are how we were created. Mm. And mm-hmm. I believe that Jesus experienced a wide range of emotions. And it wasn't just the happy, clappy emotions that he experienced. He also experienced, I believe, anxiety in the garden when he was sweating drops of blood.
Right.
I think he, you know, experienced anger when he's driving out the people in the temple. And we would not say that those are, quote unquote, good emotions. And so, yeah, in my study, I just argued, no, I think emotions are not good or bad. They're comfortable and uncomfortable. And yet they all.
Respero. Hey, we've talked about them before. They're an organization that offers faith-based counselor training. They believe that the aim of counseling is real transformation, not just symptom management or removal. Their counselor training courses equip you to help people to be great lovers of others, to understand why they do what they do, to be emotionally healthy, and to live out their identity as someone deeply loved and delighted in by God. All their training is rooted in the belief that Jesus is a source of life and that we can be a part of his work of healing and restoration.
And for pastors and ministry leaders, their training is a proven way to identify the people in your church who might be gifted for lay counseling, and it can be a powerful way to help make your church into a genuine healing community. They provide all the training and the supervision that allows your leaders to do great work and to free up pastoral staff from needing to do all the pastoral counseling in your church. If you are interested, you can go to respero.org, that's R-E-S-P-E-R-O.org, and click on the counselor training tab.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, a 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life God shares with us. It's a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence, and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us towards holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people all over the world in this formation framework, and it has helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives, to learn how to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation. They're pointing to something. For example, if you're angry, it's pointing to a sense of injustice. Mm-hmm. If you're sad, it's pointing to this need to be comforted. And so I think they're all little flags that point to something else. So the question becomes, not is it good or bad, but what is it pointing to?
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Let's get back to the show.
As you were talking, Matt, earlier, that it's a new perspective for me to think about my emotion, because I did think of them as, like you were saying, Christy, like immature or, like evidence of some kind of problem. You know, if I was a mature Christian, I would only experience, I'd never experience fear, for example, and or sadness. Like I would, you know, the joy of the Lord would be my strength. So obviously, if I'm feeling sad, you know, I'm not believing in God enough or something like that. But it's been helpful, like you're saying, for me to realize that my emotions are messengers. Like they're pointing to something. They are giving me important feedback.
Yeah,
that's right.
As to like what's happening in my life, in my inner world, you know, like, and sometimes to my body, like what's happening to me.
Right.
So I think that's helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, I know your study. I've heard some people talk about feelings and emotions synonymously, and that's oftentimes how I use it. But I know that you talk about feelings and emotions and moods being different kind of categories. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you discovered.
Yeah, there's a lot to say because feelings and emotions, I don't believe, are the same. Now, I would argue that feelings can be a component of your emotions, but you can feel cold and have a sensation, or you could feel hungry and have a sensation and have that not be connected to a cognitive thought that's going on inside. Same with moods. You know, moods, emotions last basically seconds to minutes, but moods can last minutes to hours to even days. I mean, and emotions are more easily, you know, there's families that you can kind of talk about that are connected in emotions. People might say like fear and anxiety are kind of cousins or something like that. Yeah. Moods, they're hard, and there's normally like a triggered emotion that kind of tips off a mood. And so, yeah, there's a lot of differences. Another thing that's different is that in emotions, there's generally a universal expression of that within a culture. For example, if you're angry in the United States, you know that because you see someone's face turn red, you see them clench their fists, their breathing might change, their volume of their, you know, of what they're saying might get louder. That's how Americans.
They might wipe their face quickly from top to bottom saying, whoop, whoop, whoop. Right?
That might be just you, Matt. I don't know. Well,
that's how the Three Stooges did it.
Yeah, the street.
Right. That's but in our culture, we kind of have these universal expressions of emotions, and moods are harder to have that kind of.
So let me see if I'm getting this, Christy. I'm hearing you say that feelings are just like any sensation in your body. So I feel hungry, I feel cold, you know, whatever. Emotions are when there's some sort of cognitive meaning that you're making of that feeling.
That's right.
So I might feel sick to my stomach, and it might be because I have a virus, or it might be because I'm anxious. And the difference is that that sickness in my stomach, there's some cognitive information that I'm giving myself of like, oh, I'm avoiding that email that, you know, or I have to do this meeting that I'm nervous about, or there's a cognitive element to it.
Yeah. Now, here's the deal. We might not always be aware of it.
Right.
You know, so for example, if you see a bear, I live in Colorado. If a bear comes into my front yard, I'm afraid.
Which it has before.
Or backyard.
Yeah, that's a true story, right?
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. I experience fear and I run. I like get all the kids in the house. Am I cognitively thinking I am afraid? No, but I am reacting to what's going on in my body and in my mind.
Yeah. And, there is some sort of cognition, even if you're not, it's not like you took the time to say, bear, what does that mean? Bear means danger. Okay. We're all going to die. I should get the kids in the house.
Right.
You don't do that. Like the thoughts don't run through your head, but there is some meaning to the bear that your body sort of understands. It's not just this sensation where you're like, oh, this is exciting. You know, like you, like the meaning is, we could die. That thing's dangerous. Get away, get away from it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm so it's protecting. Yeah, exactly.
That's fascinating. Exactly.
You know, you said some things, Christy, and I kind of want to back up, and then I want to share something I read this morning that relates to what we're talking about. So you mentioned Jesus feeling anxious, and I think there's a large swath of Western Christians who've been told that fear and anxiety are faithless.
Right.
That there's certain emotions good Christians won't feel.
Yeah.
And I think it's blatant with like anxiety. You know, don't worry about anything but by prayer and petition, make your request known to God. It's sort of like this anxiety dam, you know, like we wall it off. But Jesus felt anxious and seemed to experience anxiety as a meeting place with God, not as a way to bypass it, but as a way to be fully present to what to his reality and what the anxiety was telling him and how God wanted to meet him there.
That's right.
So I guess, listener, if you've been told that things like fear and anxiety, even anger, which is a little more subtle, but anger is very much policed based upon gender, based upon race, based upon power. So, you know, pastors can get angry, but congregants can't at pastors, that kind of thing. That those feelings, while uncomfortable, can be full of faithfulness.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, at the beginning of my whole study, I really did argue that we are not compartmentalized. We can't say like, okay, here's my spiritual life. And so I'm just going to like read my Bible and study and pray and love God. We're like a whole being. And so I tell a story about how I have a shoe bin in my garage for all of my six kids, and everybody has a bin and all the shoes fit, and it's perfect for shoes, but it's not perfect for our lives. We can't say, here are my relationships, here's my emotions, here's my spiritual life, here's my vocational life. We can't do that. Hmm. And we are way more like an ecosystem. In fact, our friend Matt from Miami kind of turned me on to this and was like, hey, I think this is how we should think about ourselves. And I think he's right that if, you know, the algae in the water in the ecosystem gets high, it's going to affect the fish, and that's going to affect the birds, and that's going to affect the vegetation. And so it is with us. If we don't pay attention to our emotions and we say fear, we should just ignore fear, pretend like we're not angry, that is going to have ramifications on our relationships, probably in our vocation, for sure in our spiritual life. And so we have to pay attention to the whole being of who we are, not just one part of it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. and the other part is I'm reading this book called The Way Out, and it's written by a clinical social worker, licensed clinical social worker, who founded and he's a founder and director of something called the Pain Psychology Center. And he's done research on how things like what we would call emotions of anxiety and fear, that they turn on pain centers in our brain and contribute to us having chronic pain.
Oh, yeah.
And the work he does is to help people regulate their fear and anxiety, retraining their brain, which then rewires a neuroplastic. So the neuroplasticity of our brain is like beautiful and wonderful, but it also can get hacked. And he's saying like chronic fear or fear and anxiety in early childhood, et cetera, can keep these pain processing centers firing beyond when they're needed. And so I guess I'm pointing this out, Chrissy, to say like, unless we deal with our emotions, we actually are cutting off our bodies from the healing work of Christ.
That's right. I 100% agree with that. Now, that's not to say that every time you have a stomach ache, it's an emotional problem, because the pendulum can go both ways, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not speaking categorically here. This is an instance of what you're describing.
That's right.
That's true sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And has been true in my life for sure. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's an opportunity that we have to pay attention and to grow.
So, I know, you know, in your, dissertation, this project that you did, you have a kind of a way of like, how do we do that? You know, like how do we, you know, it's imperative that we handle our emotions, but how do we do that?
Yeah, so I give kind of three steps to how do we pay attention, and they are notice, name, and navigate. So first we have to notice our emotions. We have to become aware of them. We have to see, like, you know, asking questions like, where am I feeling this in my body? What sensation am I feeling? Or have I felt this before? And really pay attention. And then we have to dig in and be able to name our emotions once we're able to notice them. And I don't just mean, you know, if I'm feeling irritated, to be like, okay, my heart rate's up. I'm feeling a little tense in my chest. I'm feeling irritated. And then I actually think that there's more work to be done than just saying irritated. There might actually be an emotion underneath that. That's a deeper emotion. You know, treating emotions in Gravity, we talk about compassionate curiosity. Treating our emotions with compassionate curiosity, I think helps us not see them as good or bad, and then helps us be able to actually dig in more to see what's really there. Yeah. If we judge ourselves, or judge somebody else for that matter, for their emotions, then we don't have compassionate curiosity, and we're not going to actually get underneath what's really under the irritation that I'm feeling. For example, I was feeling irritated the other day. Was I really feeling irritated? No, I actually was feeling irritated at one of my kids because of something that they said. But when I dug in, it was that I was really feeling disrespected.
Okay.
You know, and so just kind of doing the work to be able to first notice, then name it, and then eventually navigate it. You know, asking the question, what is God inviting me into with this emotion, or what is my emotion pointing to? Now, sometimes before we navigate it, we have to regulate. And so,
can you say what you mean by that? What do you mean by regulate? Before we name, we have to regulate. What does that mean, and how do we do it?
Yeah, there are times when our emotions are so heightened that we can't navigate it. We can't even ask the question, like, what is this pointing to? Because it's filling our bodies so much that we have to express it in healthy ways. And so what does it look like to regulate our bodies, to express our emotions in healthy ways? For example, if I'm really angry, this literally happened not too long ago. You can hit your pillow in your bedroom. Go to your bedroom, shut the door, hit your pillow, cry, or go in your car and scream at the top of your lungs. Like, you're not hurting anybody. Now, don't scream at your kid. Don't hit your kid. Don't harm somebody else. But there are ways to physically get that emotion out. Some people like to chop wood or be active, like go for a run or exercise. It's like a way of sweating it out, so to speak. But there are ways that we can regulate our bodies to then be able to think clearly enough to ask the questions that I think would help us kind of move us towards greater vulnerability and even obedience in our lives, in relationships with God.
Yeah. So, one of the ways that I've read about that kind of process that I think you're talking about, Christy, is like we need our prefrontal cortex online, right? But when we're in a state of heightened emotion and it sort of takes over our bodies, we get cut off from our prefrontal cortex and we're operating kind of out of our lizard brain, just survival mechanisms, that kind of a thing. And we end up, we just don't have access to the, to the part of our brain that's needed to navigate this and understand what's happening to me and, you know, that kind of thing. So when we're in that heightened state, it's helpful for me sometimes to just think like, I just don't have access to even understand what's happening to me right now. Yeah. Like I'm behaving as if a bear's in the backyard. You know what I mean? And it's like a bear's not in the backyard, but I my body doesn't know that. And I have to do something to get my body calm again so that I can reengage that prefrontal cortex and think about this a little bit and say, well, what happened to me and what's happening to me?
I tend to think in pictures a lot. And so sometimes when I'm speaking in front of a group of people, I might have like a soda bottle with me and I tell a story about how, like, I shake up the soda bottle and I tell a story about how, like, I had a terrible day and the meeting went bad and, you know, all these things. And I just kind of list out all the bad things that happened. I get home, the house is a mess. The kids are disobedient. Paul said something mean to me and I explode and I like open up the bottle and soda goes everywhere.
Right.
And then I say, you know, for us to regulate, doesn't mean that our circumstances changed. Like my day could still be bad. All the terrible things can still happen. The kids can still be disobedient. Paul could still say something unkind. And what does it look like? And then I take the soda bottle and I'm like, shh, you know, just like a little bit of shh, and like let the air out so that it's not exploding. That is what we have to do with our bodies. We have to learn these ways to let the pressure off and express the emotions so that it doesn't throw up everywhere on somebody else.
Yeah. This is something no one taught me this, Christy.
Yeah.
I don't know. No one taught me that my body was a place of knowledge, power, curiosity, agency, that I have to learn how to take dominion of my body. Which includes sensations, moods, vibes, emotions, feelings, all of that. And if I don't do that, there'll be really negative ramifications or consequences that I won't like. Like, that seems like pretty, when I say that out loud, it's like, well, duh, you know, who else is going to take dominion of your body? You know, you probably wouldn't like it if somebody else did. Most people don't like that feeling when somebody else does that to you. But also, like, boy, I haven't, I've had to teach myself, you know?
And now, a word from a sponsor. All right, let's get back into our conversation.
There's two ramifications of this that I just want to highlight. One, because I think that all this talk about emotions, like, we can maybe think of it in the realm of, like, emotional health or, you know, psychotherapy or, like, just becoming a, like, a more emotionally healthy person, which is a good thing, obviously. But there's also... I know you put this in the paper, but, like, there's also this Godward dimension of our emotions. It's not just about me becoming a healthier human being, but it also has to do with my connection with God. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But Matt, when you were saying, it also has a connection in my mind to justice, because Matt, you were saying that, you know, who else is going to take dominion of my body? And I remember I was in a session where Cole Arthur Riley was speaking. And she said, I'm going to paraphrase this, but she said something along the lines of, if you don't inhabit your body and take responsibility for your own body, someone else will. Like, someone else will. And she just named, like, some of these forces that exist in our culture that are seek, you know, and I think about, you know, the ways that they've sort of created, you know, cultivated the algorithm of Instagram, for example, to just get you to keep, right? They sort of, in some ways, they're hijacking our brains. They're hijacking our bodies for purposes that are not inherently good for us, right? They're good for the bottom line. They're good for the profitability of major corporations, but they're not good for us. And so there are actually, like, justice implications of this, that if I don't learn to navigate my emotions, some forces or people out there are going to hook, they're going to hook me. Right? And my body is actually going to be, my emotions are actually going to be leveraged in service of who knows what purposes. You know what I mean? And so that's a big part of this, I think, is, like, I have to take responsibility. I have to take ownership. I have to inhabit my own body and my own emotions, or, like, they will be hijacked. Somebody's going to use them.
Yeah. And I think probably people hear that, Ben, and they think, gosh, that's a lot of work or something, or that's really hard. And yet I called my whole thing Kingdom Emotions, because I believe when we do that, when we have an opportunity in front of us, that like living in a way that we can fully express and learn and grow, like that is the way of the kingdom when it's done in a healthy way.
Yeah. And it's the way of freedom. You know what I mean? Like it feels odd. It feels, you know, that there is a, it's kind of like working out for the first time after January 1st, when you make a New Year's resolution, like there's difficulty in it because it's like, okay, this is a new habit for me, but there's goodness in it. And it brings a sense of freedom because I am taking responsibility. I'm taking ownership with God. Maybe can you talk about the Godward, dimension of this? You know, like, you know, because part of the assertion in the paper is, like, if we pay attention and tend to our emotions, if we learn to do this, it actually leads to greater intimacy with God. Can you talk about how that works?
Can I nerd out just for a second and give you some statistics, because I think this is so cool. Okay, so, you know, in my study, the whole study was, does growing your emotional intelligence increase your perceived intimacy with God? Okay. So what I did is, in this group of people that were picked, and they were from all over the United States, men and women, and they did an emotional intelligence test, and they had a score, like an actual number score. It came from Harvard, and so they did that test. Then I created an assessment to how intimate do you feel with God at this time. And they did that as well. Then at the end, I taught for, you know, 12 weeks. Then at the very end, they took those two assessments at the, and the beginning, their EQ, their emotional intelligence IQ, was 50.31. And at the end, and this is on a scale of 1 to 75. So at the end, their final EQ was 53.89. So as collectively as a whole, they grew 3 points in their emotional IQ just in 3 months. Now, you think, okay, that's big. That's a growth of like 3.58. But what was so cool was that there was this ginormous jump in how they experienced intimacy with God, specifically in communication with God, like sharing how they felt with God, with their emotions and frustrations and questions. Also how they viewed God. Like, they felt closer to God. They felt known by God. They felt loved by God. And they also were more aware of the Holy Spirit's prompting, like knowing that God was present and active with them in their lives. And so for me, I'm like, man, in churches, we're all about, hey, do Bible study and have this prayer group. But within 3 months, this group of people had grown significantly in, now I'm not saying that reading your Bible and praying is bad, but I think if we think of ourselves holistically, like that ecosystem I said before, then we would go, oh, there's other ways to grow in our intimacy with God than just the Bible and prayer. And here's one of those ways. And it showed itself. And so that was super cool. With that, I mean, maybe it's helpful to give like an actual illustration from my life. Because I think we can talk about this all day long, but this is like a real story, which I guess just be gentle with me because, you know, I'm vulnerable here, being vulnerable.
It's just three of us here talking, Christine. Right.
Nobody else is listening to this digital file. Hundreds of people listening.
Yeah, no. So I'm sitting on the couch on a Saturday. It's like almost 7 o'clock. I'm like literally in like workout pants and like, haven't showered. Like, Saturdays are my day off. So I'm like, woohoo, you know, we're just hanging out as a family, watching a game. And I get a text on my phone and it says, you know, see you soon. Now, you guys, I never make appointments on Saturday because it's my day off. Like,
wait, was this a number you didn't, that wasn't in your phone?
I know. I mean, it was like a person that I knew and I had made, you know, I'm a pastor. I had made this appointment. And I was like, oh my gosh, why did I do this on a Saturday? This was the dumbest thing I've done. And instead of just texting the person back and being like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I totally forgot, I don't say anything. I don't even talk to my family. I like go into crazy mode. I throw my shoes on. I jump in the car. I'm like in my driveway and I text the person back. Yep. Now, where I was meeting this person was like 20, 25 minutes away from my house. And we were supposed to meet from like 7 to 8. And I just ignore the fact that this is not going to work out. Mm. Like, I just start driving and I'm like basically 20 minutes. Like, I'm probably like 5 minutes away now. And she calls me and she's like, hey, where are you? And I'm like, hey, I'm on 25. And then I totally lie to her. I'm like, sorry, traffic is terrible. Like, I'm still coming. And she's like, you know what, let's just, what cross street? And I tell her what cross street. She's like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, let's just, you know, reschedule. We can meet next week. And I'm like arguing with her. No. Like I can meet you. I'm on my way, you know? And she's like, Christy, it's no big deal. So anyway, we hang up the phone. I'm out of my mouth comes, you're so stupid. And I hit my steering wheel. And I start crying, like ugly cry, like so hard that I'm hardly breathing right. Like, you know, I literally pull over on the highway because I'm like, this is dangerous. Like, I can't drive.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting on the side of the highway sobbing and I probably yelled and hit my steering wheel like 25 times. You're so stupid. You're so stupid. And I was like, finally, when I calmed down, like there had to be, obviously I noticed there was an emotion going on. And then I was like, okay, what is this? Am I just angry? I was angry. Am I sad? Like that I was missing this appointment? Yeah. Am I embarrassed? Yes. But when I sat there and really thought about it, what I had to name my emotion was shame. I was feeling shame that I had made a dumb decision, but I was thinking I was dumb. Yeah. I'd made a poor decision, but I was thinking that it was me, that it was my identity.
Yeah.
And regulating myself and letting that emotion out and then being like, okay, God, what do you want to say to me? I mean, I sat there in the car and was like, God, help. Like, what do you say to my heart right now? Cause I am like overwhelmed and feeling a lot.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, it was not like Holy Spirit was like, you're great. It wasn't like I was like hearing in my spirit, like, it's no big deal that you lied and that you like, cause there definitely needed to be like an apology later to that person. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I don't know why I didn't just say I was like totally forgot. But at that moment in my car on the side of 25, Holy Spirit just said, I am here. And that is what I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in shame, you want to hide.
Yeah.
When you're in shame, you want to cover up. When you're in shame, you want to pretend. Like, it's no big deal that you're going to be 30 minutes late for this meeting. And, you know, like, just ignore it. And I felt like God was saying, in these big emotions that you're having, I am with you. And you don't have to cover it up. You get to be right with me in that. And that was probably one of the most intimate moments I've had with the Lord in the past few months. Have I studied my Bible? Have I preached a bunch of sermons? Have I led Bible studies? 100%. And yet in my car, navigating my emotions, probably one of my most intimate moments with God.
Yeah.
And so I think if we can notice and name and navigate, it is an opportunity to grow, to be seen by God, and to know Him more intimately.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that with us, Christy. I think nobody's ever experienced that but you, but I do appreciate, no.
Yeah.
We all have.
Some people can relate to that, but not me.
No, there's a sense in which, there's a sense in which all of us have that moment in the car and the choices that lead up to that moment, like little micro choices that are where we're simply trying to avoid failure or shame. That then compound our failure and shame.
Yeah.
Right? And there's so many strategies we have to deal with that that are not, that don't actually deal with it, that just bury it or displace it, right? Or increase it. And so yeah, I appreciate the story from your life because I feel like we can be terrified of facing our emotions.
Yeah.
Terrified.
Yeah.
It's like we would rather do anything than sit and get honest about how we're feeling.
Yeah.
And that story, I think, puts, I mean, I can see you ugly crying. I can see you punching your steering wheel. I can see those little micro decisions to avoid failure and shame that they then compound that, which, you know, it's a microcosm, I think, for the human condition, right? So it's like
right.
Our lives are essentially that little episode writ large. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the courage to not only for you, and I'm saying courage, Christy, but maybe in the moment it felt like desperation to face it, but then also to share it so that then we can be emboldened to maybe face it too.
Yeah, that's my hope. My hope is that people do have the courage and bravery to first notice it and then process it.
Yeah. Thanks, Christy. I think one thing I just want to offer here as we close, this has been kind of a journey for me, like learning to pay attention to my emotions, learning you know, that I can't just power through or, you know, stuff them and just get on with my life because they're inconvenient. Or I, you know, I'm scared because I don't know what they mean, you know, that kind of a thing. Or I'm afraid. I think there's like, I've always avoided sadness and fear because those emotions feel vulnerable to me, weak. But anyway, one of the little thoughts, I don't know if this will help anybody, but it has really helped me. Cause I think that one of the things that's scary about facing our emotions is because we are telling ourselves stories. Like that's, you know, there's a cognitive element, like you said before. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm experiencing fear, for example, I'm afraid that if I tend to the fear, the thing I'm fearing is what I will be like encountering. Right. Mm-hmm. So your example about shame, oftentimes I find what's underneath shame for me is a fear of loss of connection. Mm-hmm. So I'm afraid of losing this relationship. I'm afraid that this person will look at me differently. I'm afraid that I will not be regarded, you know, with esteem and affection from this person. And so shame sort of covers over that fear and is like, well, you can't let people know what's actually going on. So I think that there's a fear for me that if I tend to this feeling, this uncomfortable pit in my stomach, if I tend to it, what I'm going to encounter is the loss of relationship. And the little trick, I don't know if it's a trick, but like the little trick that really helps me is to say, no, all I'm tending to is what's happening in my body. It's just fear. It's just an emotion. Yeah. It's just fear that I'll lose connection. I won't lose connection if I pay attention to the fear of losing connection. And there's a huge amount of relief that comes for me when I just realize that and name it. Oh, yeah. What's happening to me? I'm experiencing fear.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it just shrink wraps it. It takes it right down to size and it's like, oh, this is just, I'm just feeling fear.
Yep.
And for some reason that feels like, oh, I can do that. I can name that. Yeah. I'm feeling afraid right now.
Yeah. That is why I have people name their emotions.
Yeah.
Because I think naming it takes the power away from it. It doesn't get to, your emotions don't get to control you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And yet it's good to express them and to have them be a part of our lives. It's part of us being alive. But we don't have to be slaves to them.
Yeah. 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 Tending to the emotion is not the same thing as believing the story that you're telling yourself about the emotion.
Yeah.
There's some connections that I'm thinking about. And this is a different podcast, but you know, there's an ancient understanding that if you knew the name of a spirit or a deity, you could control it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so you see Jesus asking
the names of the demons.
Names of demons, right? And I think there's a in addition to whatever is going on there, there's a deep psychology truth that's at work there. You know, if shame is a metaphorical demon, that part of taming it is naming it. Smash that like button, folks. Hit that subscribe bell so you never miss.
Wait, did you say hit that subscribe bell? Is it a bell?
Have you been on Riverside recently? They have subscribe bells. Smash that subscribe button and make sure you hit that notification
ring,
bell.
Ring those
so you
subscribe
never
bells.
Miss when we go live. Christy Penley, all jokes aside and all misspeaking aside. Thanks for this work. I wonder if you have any plans to turn this into, you know, a book or a traveling stage play.
Yeah. Wow, that would be something. I am in the talking stages with two different publishers, and so we'll see what comes this next year, 2025. The hope is that, that it becomes a book at some point for that it's not just academic, that it's a layman's book and that we can all learn. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Awesome.
Well, it's been great having you as a guest, Christy. I hope that you will join us again.
Yeah.
On the Gravity Commons podcast soon.
At some point, when you get some time in your schedule, mm-hmm. It'd be great to see you again.
All right. Well, everybody.
Peace, friends.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith, spirituality, and whatever else comes up. Also, Ben and I hang out there a lot. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. And we'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.
When you get the Planet Fitness Black Card, you can bring a friend anytime you work out. And now through March 13th, get your first month free when you join. You heard that right. Conquer the stair climber with your partner in climb. Enjoy a post-workout recovery session in the hydro massage. And do it all again with access to any of our 2,700 convenient locations. So, you coming? Get your first month free and all the perks with the PF Black Card for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 13th. See club for details.